It is Tuesday, June 8th, 2021, and this is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. On our show today, short-term rentals in Fayetteville are regulated and require business licenses now. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has the details in just a few minutes. In our second half hour, we conclude our series of suggested summer reads with two friends' books in Bentonville. Today, books for younger readers. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore has that for us. After Ozarks today on Here and Now, mandolin master Chris Thiele lost his radio show and his tour dates last year. So, isolated by the pandemic, he got to work on a solo album. We hear that new music and the latest on Congress as it gets ready to pass a bipartisan bill addressing competition with China. That's on Here and Now, beginning right after this edition of Ozarks at 1 o'clock. The Arkansas Department of Health is counting three new fatal cases of COVID-19 after the most recent 24-hour testing period. There have now been 5,849 virus deaths in our state. There are 62 newly diagnosed cases, but 12 fewer hospitalizations and 113 fewer active cases than 24 hours ago. Arkansas-based Simmons Bank is in the beginning stage of purchasing Landmark Community Bank based in Collierville, Tennessee, and the parent company of Triumph Bank based in Memphis. A press release from Simmons indicates the process has been approved by boards of directors and now awaits approval from Landmark and Triumph shareholders and the customary regulatory approvals. John McDonald, the University of Arkansas track coach who coached Razorback squads to 40 national championships, has died at the age of 82. A statement from his family says he died last night, surrounded by family. Later this week on Ozarks at Large, we'll listen again to a conversation he had with us in March 2013, when his memoir was published by the University of Arkansas Press. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will host a super regional this weekend in Fayetteville. Last night, Arkansas used three home runs to defeat Nebraska 6-2 to advance in the NCAA tournament. The Razorbacks will host North Carolina State in a best-of-three series for a berth in the College World Series. And 30% chance of rain tonight and tomorrow during the day. Lows tonight from 68 to 71. Highs tomorrow from the mid to upper 80s. Pleasant Tuesday to you. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us. Fayetteville City Council voted to enact legislation governing short-term rentals within city limits during its April 20th meeting. The ordinance, which went into effect May 21st, requires all short-term rental operators to secure a business license for each rental unit. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
City Council is providing a six-month startup period in order for all operators to come into compliance by November 21st. A short-term rental is defined as the leasing out of a furnished residential dwelling on a short-term basis, generally less than a month. City officials estimate there are approximately 500 to 600 such units in Fayetteville. Mary McGettrick, long-range planning and projects manager for the city, says about 2 years ago, City Council passed a resolution directing staff to research short-term rentals and see if there was a way to regulate them responsibly and bring them into compliance.
Because there were very few types of short-term rentals over however long they've been in existence that were actually legal. So staff began to do research, and we really found that while, you know, there wasn't it wasn't a raging fire that needed to be put out. It was definitely something that was becoming a growing issue and that we needed to address. And that's kind of what long-range planning is in general, you know, addressing smaller problems that become larger problems in 3, 5, 10 years.
There are two types of short-term rentals. In a type one rental, the principal use of the property remains as a full-time residence, and the owner must occupy the residence for 9 months of the year. A type 2 short-term rental is not occupied by a permanent resident. Under the ordinance, both types have to fill out a business license application and have a life safety inspection.
However, our type twos, right now, we have a 6 month grace period that council enacted as part of this ordinance, which allows them to come into compliance. Outside of that grace period, any type twos that are not in a zoning district that allows hotel motel use by right, so that's primarily type twos that are in residential neighborhoods, would be required to get a conditional use permit. So that's a process where you go through planning commission and they make sure that, you know, they take a look at what you're trying to do and make sure that that everything is kind of on the up and up.
There is a density cap for type 2 rentals that require a conditional use permit. Based on census data, the cap is estimated to be around 700 units. And once that threshold is reached, McGettrick says they can no longer issue permits.
We do have a sunset clause as part of this ordinance, which means that council acknowledged that things may come up that we weren't quite, you know, we couldn't have anticipated. So what that means with the sunset clause is that they have the ability to go back and reevaluate this ordinance. And so if something like that does come up, then they'll be able to say, okay, well, maybe we need to extend the cap or something like that. But they do have the opportunity to review the ordinance, and then staff will be providing kind of periodic updates to how the rollout is going for the ordinance.
The sunset clause lasts 20 months after the passage and approval of the ordinance. Owners of non-permanent structures like an Airstream trailer cannot apply for a business license. However, they can apply for a conditional use permit to get a business license.
Right now, that's the one case in which you couldn't really come in and get permitted under our grace period. And it's becoming more and more popular for people to do. If people do have that, it doesn't mean that you can't operate as a short-term rental, but you do have to go through the conditional use permit process.
As part of their business license application process, operators are required to register with Fayetteville's Landlord Representative Registry beginning June 18th. The registry, which became available to the public in May, lists contact information of a designated representative to serve as a point of contact for renters and their neighbors. Previously, only landlords with two or more long-term rental properties were required to submit data to the registry. Now, short-term rental operators are expected to do the same.
There are smaller requirements within the ordinance for short-term rental operators. And so those include paying your hospitality tax, keeping a log of all of your guests, designating an agent. If you're a type two and you don't live on the property, you have to designate an agent that can be on the property within a certain amount of time at you know, life safety or law enforcement officer's discretion, should there be an emergency. So there's a number of things that you kind of have to do as an operator once you have your business license.
McGettrick says the new ordinance will benefit the city in a number of ways.
It's very difficult to enforce when there's nothing to enforce. So if there are complaints, if there are noise violations, if there are big parties, you know, with the nature of short-term rentals, once the party's over, the complaint is resolved, right? And so, but we were seeing it happen over and over again, and it was very difficult to prove that someone was operating as a short-term rental.
With the new ordinance, McGettrick says they can prove someone is operating a property as a short-term rental and can resolve complaints more quickly. Regulating these units can also help improve safety.
We also have an insurance requirement. So if something did happen on the property, a lot of these short-term rental operators, they didn't even realize that most homeowners insurance does not cover your property when it's operating as a short-term rental unless you pay for an additional rider. And so if something happens to a guest, to you, to your home, that can be a huge financial strain on you if your homeowner's insurance doesn't cover it. So I think that's another big one kind of for just general safety of our citizenry, their financial and their physical safety.
Property owners who don't currently operate a short-term rental within city limits but want to and aren't sure when they'll start can apply for a business license during the six-month grace period.
Specifically, if you're that type two that applies to the cap that would need a conditional use permit, it's a good idea to come in and go ahead and apply for the business license so that when you are ready to operate as a short-term rental, that you have that option and you don't miss the cap and you're prepared and ready to go.
More information about the regulation of short-term rentals in Fayetteville can be found at fayetteville-ar.gov/str. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Anyone planning to visit the Buffalo National River Park area north of Jasper tomorrow, take note. Demolition of an old bridge Wednesday, June 9th on Highway 7 at Pruitt in Newton County will temporarily impede both southbound and northbound traffic. However, once blasting is finished and the site secured, vehicular traffic will be allowed to resume along the newly constructed Highway 7 bridge. But during the closure, all visitors floating the upper sections of the river will be required to exit at the Ozark access to prevent entrance into the demolition area. Access to the river can be reestablished at Hasty or the lower Pruitt access point after the blasting portion of the demolition has occurred. Hikers will be prohibited from entering the safety perimeter until the site is secure. Due to the geography of the area, there will be no staging area from which the public can safely view the demolition. All other recreational opportunities in the park and all other sections of the Buffalo River will remain open. The closure is a coordinated effort between the National Park Service, Arkansas Department of Transportation, Newton County Sheriff's Department, and the Arkansas State Police. If you'd like more information, you can visit the park's website.
Hello, this is Mike from Fayetteville, Arkansas. My favorite memory of KUAF is when my girlfriend and I moved down here in 2007 from Indiana with our dog and our backpacks, and that was about it. We rented a house on the south side of town, and we didn't have any furniture, but we'd hang out in there on our air mattresses, and we had a radio, and we'd listen to Rock and Roll at night and KUAF in the morning and drink coffee, and I fell in love with KUAF back then, and we're still here in Fayetteville all these years later, married, three kids, a home, and love Fayetteville, and we're, you know, we listen to Rock and Roll at night and still KUAF in the morning. Love you guys. Thanks. Bye.
This is Ozarks at Large. This month, Theater Squared is presenting My Father's War, a play from T2's artistic director Bob Ford about the experiences in World War II of his father-in-law, Art Herzberg. The play was first presented several years ago when T2 was still in Nadine Baum Studios across the street from their current home. In both productions, Art Herzberg is portrayed by his daughter, Amy Herzberg. My Father's War brings to stage stories Amy heard her father tell for years. Bob Ford says the idea for a play about Art's experiences developed for him when he and Amy were at a museum in France near where Art crawled up Utah Beach as part of the Normandy invasion. Bob Ford says Amy was on a payphone talking to her father who was living in Phoenix, and he was relating to her his memories of that time. Bob Ford says Art Herzberg is the uncredited co-author of the play, and by the way, Art is a fan of the work. He first saw it performed in dress rehearsal for the Nadine Baum studio version and has taken in a few performances this time around, too, including a performance on the night of June 2nd, his 96th birthday. Sunday afternoon, following a production of the show, he got on stage to discuss the portrayal of his 19-year-old self. He told the audience in the West Theater that when Bob and Amy visited him in Phoenix years ago to start the process that would become My Father's War, well, Art wasn't convinced it was all going to work.
And I talked for 3.5 hours. And he said he's going to make a play out of it. And I said, it's impossible. You can't do it. And I guess I was wrong.
Art says about 95% of what we see in My Father's War is true. The stories he repeated to Amy when she was growing up were mostly what Art calls a Jerry Lewis movie kind of experience. There was the time he was ordered to crawl up to a pillbox, that is, a German machine gun fort, and lob a grenade into it. Dangerous, dangerous work for anybody, but especially for a 19-year-old kid from Chicago. He crawled under barbed wire to reach the pillbox and then did something he wasn't supposed to do, but he was a 19-year-old kid from Chicago.
They told me, he said two seconds. I was told, take the grenade, go up to that pillbox. I had to crawl through barbed wire, and just like you saw, when I got the other side of the barbed wire, I went and I waved to them, and they waved back to me, just like you saw.
Bob Ford says he wants to stop the play every time to tell the audience that really happened. Art really turned around and waved to his fellow soldiers before he lobbed the grenade into the pillbox. Oh, and about that grenade.
He says, you've got 5 seconds. He says, you let the handle fly off. He says, and make sure that you do it within 5 seconds, throw it into the pillbox. So I said, okay. And I did just like they told me to. I let the handle fly off and it started going zzzz like that. I thought it was going to drop it. I took it, I threw it into that hole, which was about that deep. It stopped and started to roll back to me.
Yes, the live grenade started to roll back to him, so he used his rifle to shove it back into the pillbox. He says the soldiers watching this were convinced Art wasn't going to make it long enough to crawl back to them, but he did.
But years later, not too long ago, I read that a five-second grenade will quite often go off in 3 seconds.
Bob Ford, the playwright and the son-in-law of Art Herzberg, says he remembers distinctly watching his father-in-law watch the play.
There's another thing I remember from that, from many things, experiences of watching my dad-in-law watch a play that I had attempted to write about his very real experiences. And it was the first time he did a reading of it, and a staged reading, and I went up to you and at the intermission, I was hyper conscious of how silly those stories looked when they were being performed. And I went up to you and gosh, I hope you remember what I remember you said. Do you remember what I said? What you said? I basically said, so it just feels really silly. And are we respecting your experience?
And?
This is good, so I can make it. Yeah. And what you said to me was, oh, no, that's what I've been trying to tell you. It was a Jerry Lewis movie. That's what it was.
There are funny moments throughout much of My Father's War, but there is one story, and we're not going to give away spoilers since the production runs through the 20th of this month, but there was one story, and this is war, and it wasn't just Jerry Lewis stuff. The heart of My Father's War is about a story Amy didn't hear from Art as a child, but later as an adult. And it's a far more serious story. Art says the first time he saw the play, it affected him.
She said, I am the girl that my father would have had if your father didn't kill my father. And I burst into tears. And I apologized. And Bob said, no. He said, we couldn't buy that.
Said, can you be in the audience for every performance, please?
Art had 211 days in combat and spent 2.5 months in the hospital after the Battle of the Bulge. He was awarded the Bronze Star. The play also examines the anti-Semitism Art experienced during his combat duty, and Sunday afternoon he was asked about that. He says he didn't have to be in the Army to experience anti-Semitism directed toward him.
And the majority of the people who you would say are anti-Semitic are really decent people. They're Americans. They get up in the morning, they go to work, they do their job, they come home. But way down deep inside of them, they got this from their parents or their parents' parents, who some guy went to work and got laid off by a Jewish employer, and he went home and talked about the rotten Jews, and the little kid, he heard that. Who's he going to believe? He's going to believe mommy and daddy. I'm not saying that's the root of all that, but I grew up in a neighborhood in Chicago. Believe it or not, we were the only Jewish family. I went to school from second grade to graduation, eighth grade. And I was the only Jewish kid in the school, except my sister, when she was old enough to come in. And I lived with that kind of stuff. I found out that the best antidote to to what was going on with these kids. I mean, we're 8 years old, 10 years old, little kids. Is to stand up to them. And my dad, who was a prize fighter, taught me. He said, Art, he says, there's only one punch in a fight, the first one. He says, if you hit first, they won't hit back.
During the course of Sunday's conversation, Art was thanked for his bravery.
I'm not sure if I was brave. I was probably more scared not to do it than to do it. And I hate to say this to you guys, but it's because I'm Jewish and because so many people felt the way they felt, and I said, and pardon my language, you. I'm just as tough as you are.
96-year and 5-day-old Art Herzberg Sunday afternoon on the stage at Theater Squared talking about his life, his experiences with World War II, and the play inspired by them, My Father's War, by Bob Ford. My Father's War is at Theater Squared through June 20th, and it takes you through the Jerry Lewis moments and the other ones, too. And maybe Art doesn't think he was brave when he completed daredevil mission after daredevil mission. But after the curtain call, you might think differently. You can find out more about the show at theater2.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, serving Northwest Arkansas since 1973, with adventure gear and clothing for hiking, kayaking, and more. Pack Rat carries dog packs, life vests, and accessories for the furry family member, too. Dedicated to conservation and waste reduction, packratoc.com for online shopping, shipping, or curbside pickup.
This is Ozarks at Large. The state's budget surplus is approaching the $1 billion threshold. This week, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked John Brummett, political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, what that record surplus might mean for Arkansas.
Well, first of all, I need to confess, when I saw that news release last week in which the governor claimed a record surplus of $980 million, I had a little knee-jerk reaction, and I challenged it. I said, Mike Huckabee left Mike Beebe a $1 billion surplus once that enabled Beebe to do all the school facilities ordered by the Lakeview case out of the surplus. And I was told, one, that was $850 billion, you're rounding it up. And two, that was a 2 accumulation over a fiscal year. This is I was somewhat embarrassed. This is $980 million in 11 months. So this is like Secretariat at the Belmont in 1972, winning by 68 links. That's how far ahead, how distant this is as a record. My take is we're going to cut income taxes in Arkansas anyway because we're under Republican control and that's what they do. And Ace Hutchinson has been incrementally, steadily cutting income taxes during his governorship. It's actually, I'm going to say something offensive to the left, it's actually worked out okay. We've had economic growth generally, driven by Northwest Arkansas, driven by Jonesboro, driven spottily by Central Arkansas. Unemployment had been low, and we've been able to keep services going by incrementally, gradually drawing down their income tax rates. This, the governor says, justifies the income tax he will call for in a special session later this year because we tightened our belts. Actually, if I understand it, this is largely the result of the fact that we went into a global pandemic and we had wide quarantine, but we didn't quarantine as much as some other states quarantined. And then the federal government started printing trillions, they did, to distribute to the states, directly to state governments, directly to businesses, directly to the people, to prop them up during this period of economic dormancy. And then, so we tightened our belts, yes, but we were being propped up by printed federal money. And then the scientists gave us a vaccine so that by May, everybody was liberated and happy to go back out and and restart the economy. So we had tight budgets. We had an artificial propping up by federal money that kept our economy going. And May alone accounted for about a fourth of this surplus. So the only way this is a template for tax increases is if we have a pandemic every year and the federal government prints $1 trillion. That's the only way that applies. So what I'm saying is, I hope the debate doesn't break down in that Hutchison is going to propose continued incrementally drawing down from 5.9 for the top rate to 5.7 to 5.5. I fear it may break down in we ought to do away with it altogether or ought to bring it down more. This 1 year's experience is no basis for any more bold tax reduction policy. And that's how I read all of that, Roby.
I'll throw one more factor in there that should be in the conversation, and that is the fact that Arkansas started collecting online sales taxes as a result of a new law.
Thank you for that. That fortifies and supports my point. The thing is, we've managed, I concede. Yes, Governor Hutchison, yes. We have managed to draw the taxes down incrementally in what is a pretty responsible way, and we have kept government going. We've been fortunate in that regard. But this year had some one-time curiosities that produced this situation. I'm just saying, let us not say, hey, we're collecting $1 billion more than we need to. Let's really cut the heck out of these taxes. I'm afraid we're going to get around to that with Governor Sanders coming eventually. But it's not the time for that based on this experience. And thank you for that amplification.
All right, let's go to another development in the last week. Common Ground Arkansas, the political organization launched by State Senator Jim Hendren, independent of Gravette, Arkansas, names their board of directors. Some pretty familiar names on there. A lot of Democrats on there, a few Libertarians, and maybe even one former Republican Speaker of the House. Does this movement have any momentum?
Not that I can see, and I hate saying that. But I'm holding out hoping against hope, perhaps. This is a solid group. This is a solid purpose, pragmatic, responsible, non-extreme, common ground governance. That used to be something that we wanted. Now in Arkansas, I fear we consider any of that kind of thing. The majority of the people fear any talk of that kind of thing as liberalism in disguise and anti-Trump, and recoil against it. And I'm afraid that's the climate we're in. But this board, bank presidents, former Republican speaker, corporate lawyers, people with associations with Tyson and Walmart, successful, pragmatically performing mayors, lawyers, bankers. If this was a corporate board, you'd say, this is a heck of a company. But the trouble is, this is a board that's going to try to influence Arkansas politics, and that's not a place where business principles apply. Politics is a field of great madness generally, but especially so in Arkansas right now. I will say this. I think the talk that Common Ground can produce a third-party governor's candidate that could gum up the works for Sarah Sanders, I think that's died down. I do think Common Ground is going to work more strategically to identify places where local leaders with pragmatic, moderate, center-right views could challenge for legislative seats. I think that's where they're going to try to go, to try to begin to change the culture away from some of the extremism to a little bit more of this pragmatic problem solving. I support them in that and hope they're successful. I think that's where we're going to have to look. They're going to have to move incrementally and slowly, I think.
Lastly, Fort Smith gets a big shot in the arm. Last week, they learned, the community learned it's going to be the pilot training center for F-16s and F-35s for the foreign military sales, I believe is how that's phrased. Big shot in the arm from an economic perspective for Fort Smith. You know Fort Smith well. What do you think this will do to the Fort Smith region, to the psyche of the region over there, as well as its economy and politics?
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing. based on what the limited information I have about it, I don't see anything bad about it. Fort Smith, I've long had a sort of a soft spot for Fort Smith. Some years ago, I left the Democratic Gazette and wrote for Don Ray, then Stevens Media, which owned newspapers around the state, one of which was the Times Record in Fort Smith. They also owned paper up the road at the Northwest Prosperity Corridor up from Fayetteville to Bentonville. And it occurred to me over the years that Fort Smith had a strong civic-minded, leadership, was a solid city and community on its own, separate from Northwest Arkansas, but was always sort of fighting on its own to sustain itself as a big commercial center for the state in comparison to the Northwest Arkansas explosion, and in comparison to Central Arkansas, and then in comparison to what's been going on in Jonesboro. So I've rooted for them. They've had struggles. They've had their whirlpool problems. They've had other problems. I'm just delighted to see that this is happening, because Fort Smith's entirely too politically conservative for my personal taste, but I always found it to be a fine place that was working hard to say, hey, we're here too, and we're not bad, and so good for Fort Smith. I hope this is a true shot in the arm.
John Brummett is a political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. His columns can be found at arkansasonline.com. He spoke with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. They discuss more in that conversation, including the Biden administration's infrastructure plan. You can find that part of the conversation at talkbusiness.net. If you're looking for some great new books to dive into this summer, we have you covered. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore finishes his conversation with Monica Diodati and Rachel Stuckey Slayton, co-owners of Two Friends Books. This time, they're talking about books for younger readers.
Monica Diodati and Rachel Stuckey Slayton began their journey as business owners early in the COVID-19 pandemic with their bookstore, Two Friends Books, in downtown Bentonville. Opening up a brick-and-mortar store in June of 2020 made Monica a little apprehensive.
I was not 100% optimistic when the pandemic hit and we had the lease, and I was nervous, but I think we were really, you know, like realistic and cautious with our projections. And we're like, okay, as long as we can like break even this year, it's like gonna be fine. We kept our overhead really low. We're pretty like scrappy and creative. So we didn't like get ourselves too, you know, like put too much on ourselves that we couldn't get out of. And honestly, the community showed up so much for us. And I think maybe small businesses in general last year, that just people realizing how important it was to help businesses survive through the pandemic, that it really exceeded my expectations. And, you know, every month I was like, oh, yeah, we can do this. And it's actually going way better than I thought. So I felt great about it.
I'd like to point out that
Rachel Stuckey Slayton here.
It's very helpful to have a partner in an endeavor like this, especially during a pandemic. I had a baby during the pandemic as well. And so having a partner who like I can rely on in my business, and also she's like a dear friend of mine. And so I feel like that like strong foundation of a relationship with this business has been like I can't tell you how important that's been, I think, to keeping things going and successful.
Rachel says the greatest joy for them through all of this has been getting to know the folks who come into the shop and support their local business.
I mean, our customers are amazing. And yes, we're masked and we don't know what their faces really look like, but the conversations are still equally delightful.
In this final installment of the summer reading list, Rachel and Monica share three books for young readers. They decided to choose one book per age group. The first book is intended for teenage readers. Here's Monica.
I picked Hani and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating by Adiba Jaigadar. I might be mispronouncing her last name. But it is a teenage love story. I would say for fans of She's All That, as I was discussing with Rachel in the car, but maybe a little more progressive and less problematic. Hani is, she just came out to her friends as bisexual, but her friends are like, well, you can't be bisexual if you've only dated guys like up to this point. And she's like, oh, and like feels bad about that and makes up a lie that she's actually dating Ishu, the like class nerd that nobody really knows very well, to like legitimize her coming out. And so she approaches Ishu and is like, hey, I told everybody we're dating. hope you don't mind. And Ishu is like, all right, I'll play along if you like make me popular. And so they have this deal going on, and it's kind of this enemies to lovers slash like relationship of convenience. But, you know, of course, they end up like falling in love. And I don't think that's a spoiler like in a romance, but it sounds really fun and sweet. And it just came out and has been getting really great reviews so far. So I feel like that would be a fun summer read for adults or teenagers.
Yes. So for a middle grade reader, I chose a graphic novel. I feel like every middle schooler slash like late elementary school reader that I know is like, give me all the graphic novels. That is all I want to read. So this is called We Dream of Space by Aaron Entrada. It is, like I said, a graphic novel set in 1986. The main characters are siblings. There's a young pair of twins. I think they're maybe like 10, and then an older sibling who's 13. And they like aren't very close at the beginning of the book. The only thing that really connects them is a science teacher that they've all had. And this is when the Challenger is going to be launched into space. And so it's about, you know, family and siblings and loving science and space exploration. And the artwork is beautiful. It's won all kinds of awards. This is a backlist book, which basically means like it's been released for a while. And it's one that like whenever I saw this book, I was like, oh, my niece is going to love this book. And so, yeah, I would recommend that to any kid, especially like if you have an interest in science, this would be an awesome summer read.
Last one is for very young readers, maybe like, I don't know, 4 to 6 years old. It's a picture book by an Arkansas author, Crystal C. Mercer, out of Little Rock. It's called From Cotton to Silk, The Magic of Black Hair. And it's a really sweet story about two sisters just like loving their natural hair. It's a celebration of cultural beauty and your own individuality. But I think what's really special about it is that Crystal, I think she says she spent more than 400 hours hand stitching all the illustrations for the book. She's a textile artist. So she created the images for the book in textiles. So it's really beautiful. It was a labor of love. It's a super unique book with the illustrations that are in it, but also the story. And it's a local writer. So that has been really popular at the shop and just a great book overall.
Yeah. And we can find all of these books at your shop, I assume. Yes.
Yes. All the ones that have been released can be found at the shop. And in August, you'll be able to get Last Summer in the City.
That's fantastic. Can you tell people where you guys are located in Bentonville?
Yes, we're at 234 Southwest 7th Street, Suite 106. It's basically the intersection of Southwest B and Southwest 7th Street in downtown Bentonville.
That was Rachel Stuckey-Slayton and Monica Diodati from Two Friends Books in downtown Bentonville. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore.
You can find all three of these young readers' books, as well as the rest of Rachel and Monica's recommendations, at ozarksatlarge.com. And on tomorrow's show, more books. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth will tell us about the return of independent bookselling to downtown Fayetteville. We may have lost the beloved Nightbird Books in 2020, but a new brick and mortar is planning to open this summer. The story behind Pearl's Books on tomorrow's show at noon and 7 p.m.
KUAF is supported by Merton's Eye and Optical, a full-service eyewear boutique in Fayetteville offering comprehensive eye exams, contact lenses, and a thoughtfully curated collection of luxury eyewear and sunglasses. More information on services and exclusive eyewear lines at mertenseye.com.
This is Ozarks at Large with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Catherine Sherrills, our militant grammarian.
Kyle, last time we talked about spoonerisms.
Yes.
And I promised to explore a similar verbal mistake this week, malapropisms.
Yes.
Or malaprops.
Right.
Either way. A malapropism is the verbal mistake in which a word is substituted for another word that sounds similar but means something entirely different, often to comedic effect.
Right.
The word malapropism is taken from a character, Mrs. Malaprop, in a 1775 play called The Rivals, written by Richard Brinsley Sheridan. It is assumed that Sheridan coined the character from the French phrase malapropos, which means inappropriately.
I wonder, you may not know this, was Mrs. Malaprop the main character in this play?
I don't know.
Because it would be, he'd be shocked to find out that almost 300 years later, his work lives on.
Oh,
through
yeah.
This.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds to me more like a supporting character.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the maid or something. Yeah. I have my own Mrs. Malaprop, a longtime friend I once worked with at a local newspaper. I overheard her one day talking to someone who called to ask for coverage of an event. Margaret kindly told the woman we couldn't cover it because, quote, we're underhanded today.
I like that.
So that's two words that she combined but switched. What
so
are
she
they?
Said underhanded, so uh-huh. Shorthanded.
Shorthanded.
Or understaffed.
Yeah.
Understaffed,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That may not exactly be an example of malapropism, but it's a favorite story of mine. Lots of famous people have been caught committing malaprops. Let's see if you can name the person who uttered this famous quote.
Okay.
The police are not here to create disorder. They're here to preserve disorder.
That is Mayor Richard Daley during the 68 Chicago Convention.
That's right.
Democratic Convention, yep.
Yep. Yogi Berra, of course, was Mr. Malaprop.
Yes.
What did he mean when he said this, Kyle? Texas has a lot of electrical votes.
Electoral votes,
yeah.
Yes.
And I bet you know, I didn't, who Wes Westrum was.
Oh, he was a pitcher and then a pitching coach in Major League Baseball.
Professional baseball player, coach, manager, and scout.
Yeah.
What did he mean when he said this? Well, that was a real cliff dweller.
Cliffhanger.
Christopher Moltisanti from The Sopranos.
Yes.
Said it was necessary to create a little dysentery among the ranks. I know how I can do that. Just leave the pizza out for a while.
Right. A little dissension?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jib or Gib, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Gib Lewis, Texas Speaker of the House, said, this is unparalleled in the state's history.
Unparalleled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bless his heart, George W. Bush had his share of malaprops. Perhaps you can explain what he really meant. The law I signed today directs new funds to the task of collecting vital intelligence on weapons of mass production.
Mass destruction.
Yeah.
What would a weapon of mass production be?
Yeah, kind of like that too, isn't it?
Yeah.
And another thing he says, I am mindful not only of preserving it, executive powers for myself, but for my predecessors as well. Which is a pretty cool trick.
Yeah, if you time travel, what did he mean for my...
What's the opposite of predecessor?
And my, the people that come after you.
Yeah.
My...
Don't act like you suck. That's a hint.
I know.
Bad hint. Successors. Successors.
Successors. Okay. My successors. See, that's one that I could hear me saying.
Same predecessors. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean. Okay. Here, we're still with George W.
Okay.
We need an energy bill that encourages consumption.
That's the funniest one yet. Discourages.
Yes.
Yes.
And he said, we cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
Hostage.
Yeah.
You know what he meant.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much of the comedy in the TV show All the Family came from Archie Bunker's malapropism, such as, A witness shall not bear falsies against my neighbor.
False witness. Right.
Well, that's all for now, Kyle. I hope listeners didn't find this discussion too monogamous.
Our Middleton grammarian is Catherine Sherrills.
91.3 is with you every day, all year long, bringing you vitally important news, plus the music, conversations, and weekend programs to give you a break from news that can be overwhelming. As we approach the end of our financial year, on June 30th, we're raising funds to keep KUAF stronger than ever. Your gift before June 30th will help us toward our goal of $35,000 for the month, and your gift right now will help pay for the programs, reporting, equipment, and technology that we need to continue bringing you radio you rely on every day. Support your public radio station today, and help us end our financial year as strong as ever. Give online at supportkuaf.com.
And continued thank you to everyone who supports Public Radio, KUAF, and Ozarks at Large. We certainly appreciate it. A majority of Harrison residents voted to fund a new recreational community center and to improve city parks during a special election this spring. In 2019, voters rejected constructing a brand new $40 million center and water park. That's according to Harrison Mayor Jerry Jackson.
Yeah, that was a year and a half ago, and it failed by the same margin. So this time we did a couple of things. We did many things, but the two major things, we cut the price in half from $40 million to $20 million. But probably the biggest thing we did, we used the property that was once the old junior high and the old high school for Harrison.
The new facility, named Creekside Community Center, will feature lots of classrooms and meeting space for tournaments and conventions, outdoor movies, and athletics.
And then we'll have an aquatic center that's going to be made up of a lap pool, an 8-lane lap pool, so we'll be able to have competition. And we'll have a therapy pool, which is much needed. And then we'll have a kids' pool, all in a large aquatic center that'll be attached to it.
Little Rock firm ETC Engineering and Architecture, which specializes in community center design, is completing plans. Renovation will be underway once a general contractor is hired later this summer.
Well, actually, because some of this will be renovated, we won't be held up by the weather like we are right now with our public safety building. We'll be able to get to work right away, and therefore some of it will be done probably in about a year from now. And then the newer sections will probably take 2 years. So 1 year to 2 years.
Mayor Jackson says an additional 3 miles of lighted city trail will also be constructed from the downtown district to the current high school campus. Harrison voters supported two ballot items in May. The first, a quarter-cent sunsetting sales tax to fund the new center. The second is a permanent quarter-cent sales tax that will fund ongoing maintenance and economic development to make the best use of the new facilities.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman, once again joined with Jill Dabbs over the phone. She's Executive Director with Downtown Springdale Alliance. Nice to speak with you again, Jill.
Nice to speak with you too, Pete.
We're talking about continuation of something we spoke with you about a month ago. Y'all awarded grants to 7 artists to create and implement murals in the downtown Springdale area. And those are all up and people can view those, but there's something else you're doing with this.
So when the murals were finished, they were all so beautiful, and the idea came to one of us to put these murals in some aspect on T-shirts for sale in order to just support the artist a little bit more than we were already able to, and celebrate the work that they did and promote a vibrant downtown Springdale by sharing this beautiful artwork on T-shirts. And we're calling this project Art Tees, and they can be purchased on from our website.
This will run through June 13th. Describe a couple of these murals. You know, I myself have not been able to get up there and take a look at these. You know, maybe a few of your favorites.
Well, one of my favorites is Octavia Logo's mural. It's so bright and beautiful, and it just speaks about life and the struggles we all have and the love that we all share. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful mural. Roxy Erickson's mural is a nod to Arkansas summers. And it's really, really lovely. It can be seen from the Greenway as you're going the spur that goes out to the Jones Center. Carol Counts's is another one that's a real favorite of mine.
What's the best way to find more information on this?
visit our website, www.downtownspringdale.org. You can find a map to the murals on there. You can find a list of the murals. You can also find a link to purchase the T-shirts. And just remember, it's for a limited time only. 60% of the net proceeds will go to each of the artists for their T-shirts that are sold. And so we're just encouraging people to visit them. And if they see one that they really love, then to get it or get three. And they're kind of designed like concert T-shirts. Oh, yeah. The series is, they're all listed on the back. It's really lovely how it was put together.
An incredibly easy way also to help our local artists who we all know during this pandemic have struggled. Again, let you know that T-shirt sale goes through June 13th. Jill, thanks for letting us know about this.
Thank you, Pete. Have a great day.
From Emma Avenue to South School, KUAF and the Community Spotlight, local matters.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and all of Madison County. I'm going to tell you about our contributors and Timothy Dennis producing the show in just a moment. But right now, Lee Wood, the general manager of 91.3 KUAF, with me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, because you want people to get a T-shirt.
I would love for people to get a T-shirt, one particular T-shirt. So June is a fundraising month here at KUAF. The end of our fiscal year is June 30th. We've done a sort of a push there at the end of the year for many, many years. And what we're doing this June, we're offering this really great T-shirt. It's the first time I think we've ever offered a T-shirt, you know, as a thank you gift. It says Public Radio Nerd. It's something that's becoming pretty well known. The branding, it's from NPR. We did a mug a few fundraisers ago, the Public Radio Nerd mug, and it flew off our shelves, so to speak. So it was really popular, so we decided to do a T-shirt. And we have a limited run. We don't have that many, so we're just offering them for this little fundraisers, see how people take to them, but they're really great. And, you know, I think people are embracing being a public radio nerd, and they want to show it to people. You're looking at me like you don't believe me.
Oh, no, I do believe you. I absolutely do believe you.
I think that, well, what we know, and I've said this before, is that NPR and KUAF and public media in general, really people have, in the last 15 months, 18 months, a lot of people, their loyalty to these brands has just gone through the roof because of the news and information that they got during a very confusing and uncertain time. And so sort of branding yourself as a fan of this is definitely something that we're seeing happen across the country.
How do people get this Public Radio Nerd shirt?
Well, all they have to do is make a donation during our June fundraiser. We have it set at $5 a month, so you can join at $5 a month. That ends up being a $60 annual gift, and that will qualify you to get the shirt. One thing that we're doing this June as well, because it's NPR's 50th anniversary, we're hoping to welcome 50 new members in June as well. So you can become a new member, set up for $5 a month, get yourself a Public Radio Nerd T-shirt, walk around town and let everybody know that you love your public radio station.
And does it say KUAF on it?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah. It has KUAF on the sleeve. It has NPR on the front with the Public Radio Nerd. And it's all thanks to a partnership with the Arkansas Tea Company.
All right.
T-shirt company.
And you can see the shirt, right? Go to KUAF.com.
Go to KUAF.com. We actually have an ad on the homepage. But then when you go to the donation page, you can look there again and you can choose your size. But there's not very many left.
Okay. Lee Wood, general manager at 91.3 KUAF. Don't leave yet because I've got to finish this up here. Contributors today include Antoinette Grajeda, Matthew Moore, Jacqueline Froelich, our militant grammarian, Catherine Churlds, our show. Produced by Timothy Dennis. Thank you, Timothy. The Community Spotlight, produced by Pete Hartman in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio. Our conversations between John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics, part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. I'm Kyle Kellums from the Carver Center for Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening. One more time, what do you do to get the shirt, Lee Wood?
You go to supportkuaf.com and support your public radio station.
All right. Please take care of yourself. We will be back with you for a brand new Wednesday edition of our show at noon and 7 p.m. tomorrow. You can always find us at ozarksatlarge.com or at kuaf.com. Thank you so much. We'll talk again real soon.